I stand before you, a white woman, a woman of European heritage, I think mostly Swedish, English, German. I'm adopted, so my precise genetic makeup is a little sketchy, but definitely a white European American woman. And I come to you this morning very deliberately conscious of who I am and what place that I am speaking from. I am sharing with you today some experiences I've had being at Standing Rock, standing in solidarity with the water protectors, with the work that I have been doing, what I have learned, the stories that have been shared to me from Native peoples. And yet, I have to be very, very careful and deliberate that this is my perspective as a white European American colonizer. I do not dare to speak for Native peoples. I ask you not to hear me in anything other than myself, and for you to recognize those of you who might share the identity that I have, that you may place yourself in that listening space as well. I'm speaking to you today somewhat extemporaneously, because the emotions and feelings that come out of this, I want to be conveyed from the most direct place of my heart. So one of the things that I went to, when was it? 2 weekends ago, was a Bearing Witness retreat. And at this retreat, I spent time with Dakota and Lakota and Mohican and Anishinaabe and members of other tribes as they shared stories of what it's like to have generational trauma, to live in this world from a place of prayer and a mindset that is very, very different from our Western mindset. And one of the things that was shared to me by a person named Jim Bear is a fundamental orientation that is different between Native peoples and people of Western culture. Here in the West, we tend to be temporally focused. We tend to orientate ourselves on a spectrum of time that puts us distant from whatever stories it is that we know within our hearts or that we have been told or that we're listening to. It is very sequential. Time is oriented linearly, right? This linearness, as I said, creates distance. It makes a relationship between us and the narratives quite different from Native peoples who are more spatially oriented. They associate their narratives in place and in space. And so when you are in a place, it does not matter if what happened 5 minutes ago or 150 years ago or 500 years ago. It lives and breathes in that space. The relationship with stories and narratives is so much more intimate than what we generally have within the Western culture. And so I wanted to start out today orientating us in the place that we're talking about, this place in North Dakota near the Missouri River, about 1 hour south of the metropolitan towns of Bismarck and Mandan, a place that has seen a disturbance happen, a clash of cultures, an orientation that is at odds with each other. This place that we're visiting, and here is a Google map of it. I hope you can see it well enough. I don't know if it would be possible, perhaps, to dim the lights. Is that okay? Thank you. We had the lights dim before, and that worked really well. The Missouri River is there on your right on the slide. It is the fourth largest river system in the world. It is the longest river in the United States. It travels across the west and joins up with the Mississippi River in the state of Missouri. Standing Rock Reservation is located just to the west of Lake, I think it's pronounced Owehu. Oahu, thank you. The pipeline is along the northern side in between the cities of Bismarck Mandan and the Standing Rock Reservation. The camp that I went and stayed at is called Camp Ocheti Shakaweed. It stands for, and it means the seven fires, the sacred seven fires. The Standing Rock Indian Reservation is just south of that. The little tributary and river that flows off of the Missouri River is called the Cannonball River. And there is a small town called Cannonball. You can see that just barely on the bottom of the map. It's a teeny tiny little town, gas station, liquor store, community center. That's about it. And then this is the camp itself. It is a camp that exists on Army Corps of Engineers land. At least that's what the federal government calls it, Army Corps of Engineers land. The conflict stems from different interpretations of ownership of land and understandings of treaties and treaties that have been broken, treaties that are always broken when it comes to Native people. There are drones that are used by the people camping there to help record the truths of what they're experiencing, to counter what is often portrayed in the media and by the law enforcement that exists primarily out of Morton County, the governing law enforcement agency. This camp is home to sometimes hundreds, sometimes thousands of people. Again, it is outside reservation land on the open North Dakota prairie. It is filled with teepees and earth structures and yurts, flimsy tents held together with 2x4s and PVC pipes. There are porta potties, no showers. There are solar panels to provide some electricity for the loudspeaker system that gives announcements, songs, prayers, dances, jokes, stories. Almost all the time, this announcement system is going. It is harsh land. The wind never stops blowing across this land. I was there. When was I there? I was there the end of October. And I camped in 35 degree weather. Pretty mild conditions compared to what they will expect. And I was freezing. I was so cold. I was in a tent in just ordinary clothes, bundled up as best as I could. And I was only there for a weekend, and yet many, many of the shelters are just like what I was in. REI canvas, sleeping on the ground, no heat, no electricity. And there you can see the Cannonball River going into the Missouri. This is where the people are living. And you might have heard the news yesterday that the Corps of Engineers issued an eviction notice. This is a notice that declares that no hunting, fishing, or recreational activities are permitted on Army Corps of Engineers land. The lands that these people have set up as home, as a place for them to protect the water, protect their own very existence. They have been at this place since August. It started out as an overflow camp from Sacred Stone Camp, which exists on reservation land. That camp quickly became full. It's in a sheltered space on reservation land, as close to the Cannonball River as you can get, just on the other side of the map that I showed you. And so they moved, and I shouldn't say moved, they added an overflow camp called Ocheti Shakowin that was built here in August. And since then, over 300 nations have come from all around the world to express their solidarity for the water protectors. There's a main road that goes through the camp where the flags of all the tribes are located. And that's where I stayed, is right next, just on the right-hand side of this. Well, actually, it would have been the left-hand side because I was near the solar panel. But you can drive all through here. You can walk all through here. And you can give birth here. This is Skybird Black Owl. And she gave birth to her baby, Minnie Wachoni. That's a phrase and a word in Dakota language that you hear all the time. It is a prayer. It is a call. It is a cry. Minnie Wachoni. Minnie Wachoni. Minnie Wachoni. Water is life. Water is life. This is the camp. We are oriented in place, in space. It is a camp that lives out the seven Lakota values of prayer, respect, compassion, honesty, generosity, humility, and wisdom. It truly is a camp of prayer. I cannot convey enough how much that energy permeates every space in the harshness and in the stories and in the very way of being. As I learned from the Native peoples that I met, there is no such thing as Native religion or Native spirituality. It is all one in their way of life, in the way that they see the world, in the way that they operate. Of course, generational trauma has put a schism in that way of life for many people, for many who lost their connection to the stories of their ancestors, who's lost the connection to their relatives, who are mired in poverty and alcoholism and drug use and violence. But there is a reclaiming that is happening, a reconnection to ancestors, a reconnection to the fullness and totality of who these people are. Prayer, respect, compassion, honesty, generosity, humility, and wisdom. This is a camp of prayer. This is a camp of nonviolence. This is a camp filled with protectors, not protesters. They are self-sufficient. They are self-governing, and they are asking for their very existence to be acknowledged. They are asking for the protection of water. So what is at stake? You might have seen or heard the expression, no DAPL. Dakota Access Pipeline is what DAPL stands for. if you're on social media at all. You can do Twitter searches. You can do Snapchat searches. You can get on Instagram. You can get on Facebook and just look for the hashtag NoDapple or the hashtag WaterIsLife or the hashtag MiniWichoni. And you will find countless stories and videos that give a perspective that you might not see if you turn on NPR or read the New York Times or read Western media. This is what is at stake. It's a project proposed by Dakota Access LLC. It's a subsidiary of Energy Transfer Partners. This is an organization, ETP, that is based in Houston, Texas. Phillips 66 is one of the financiers. Many, many banks are financing this project. It is a route that takes the crude oil mined in the captured in the Bakken oil fields and has it transporting 450 to 550,000 barrels of crude oil per day of Bakken crude oil, which is fracked and highly volatile, from the lands of North Dakota to Patoka, Illinois. It's a pipeline that travels 1,170 miles. In total, it will have 200 water crossings, and it requires 3 easements. In North Dakota, this pipeline was originally scheduled or planned to go north of Bismarck. You can see Bismarck Mandan kind of in the top quarter of the screen in a little bit of yellow. And the dotted line is the original path of the pipeline. But that would pose some serious dangers to the majority white people that live in Bismarck and Mandan. And so at some point along the way, without doing the proper environmental assessments and with inadequate consultation with the native peoples in that area, the pipeline was rerouted south of Bismarck Mandan to cross the Missouri in a much, much wider stretch that is 2 miles from Standing Rock Reservation. 2 miles. What is at stake is the drinking water in total for about 12 million people, not just people who live at Standing Rock, but the waterways that this Missouri River feeds, especially at this wide stretch. The Dakota people are citing the Treaty of 1851, as well as a subsequent treaty, I think it's from 1869. And that is the cases that are brought before the courts, that these treaties have been broken. They're citing this as land, as sacred land. There is countless burial sites and sacred spaces that the Native people have used for centuries, millennia. Time is endless. And this is the space where you may have seen footage of direct action protests, of law enforcement defending the pipeline at this stretch. It's about, this is the Cannonball River. I would say it's maybe a mile north of the Ocheti Shakowin camp. It's the most northern forward line. It's the closest that the water protectors can get. And this is the site of where the direct action has taken place that you might have seen in mainstream media. This is where law enforcement from Twin City counties, from Hennepin County, Dakota County, maybe Ramsey County. I can't remember all the counties that sent some supporting law enforcement to North Dakota at the request of their state. And this is the place where rubber bullets are fired, water cannons are fired. This is the place where people's lives are endangered. So on November 3rd, a call was put out for clergy, for people of faith, leaders of faith from across across denominations, across faith traditions, to arrive on November 3rd. I was there the weekend before. I was not able to make this event, so I was an advance scouting unit, so to speak, that brought some lay people. We met up with the Black Hills UU Fellowship, a small little lay-led fellowship, the Unitarian Universalists in Bismarck, Mandan were there. They have been on the ground supporting Standing Rock. They are a small fellowship. I'm not sure how big you all are. They are a small fellowship of about 60 people, perhaps. And they have been right there in the heart of the action. But on this day, on November 3rd, over 500 clergy arrived, including 55 Unitarian Universalists, including Peter Morales, the president of the Unitarian Universalist Association. They were there for the weekend, staying at hotels and the casino and camping on site and camping out on church basement floors and community center floors. And they gathered in prayer and song and solidarity. Their main action was to ceremoniously burn a copy of the Doctrine of Discovery. You all might have recalled the Doctrine of Discovery was a big topic of conversation at General Assembly in 2012 down in Phoenix, Arizona. Was anyone at that General Assembly by chance? Okay. At that time, the Unitarian Universalist Association, as well as other faith communities, publicly repudiated the Doctrine of Discovery. We stated, therefore, be it resolved that we, the delegates of the 2012 General Assembly of the Unitarian Universalist Association, repudiate the Doctrine of Discovery as a relic of colonialization, feudalism, and religious, cultural, and racial biases having no place in the modern-day treatment of indigenous peoples. And be it further resolved that we call upon the Unitarian Universalist Association and its member congregations to review the historical theologies, policies, and programs of our Unitarian Universalist and Unitarian Universalists to expose the historical reality and impact of the Doctrine of Discovery and eliminate its presence in the contemporary policies, programs, theologies, and structures of our faith tradition. And we called upon ourselves to begin partnerships with indigenous peoples in a process of honor and healing, often called truth and reconciliation. The resolution goes on. But we, as well as many other faith traditions, issued similar kinds of repudiations of this 15th century decree, which essentially established the claiming of this land of the United States because it was God's will. That is the foundation of what allowed England and Spain and other colonizers to come to the United States and take this land from the indigenous people in the name of God. And that Doctrine of Discovery is the foundational bull decree from the Pope, if you can imagine that, that is the foundation for so much of our government. This is the power that this 15th century document continues to have here in the United States. After the ceremonial burning of the Doctrine of Discovery, the faith leaders received medicine in the form of smudging with sage. They gathered along the main road, which is County Road 1806 that you saw on the map that goes north-south. So just north of the camp is where that blockade happened. They marched down the street, 500-plus clergy from all faith traditions. They gathered together in one mass. They also gathered in one long line. You can see some of our Unitarian Universalist clergy members wearing Standing on the Side of Love stoles. They gathered to that site and were offered opportunities to go up onto the little bridge where so much danger and harm and intimidation has happened. They were invited to go up there to offer prayers and to be in peaceful and prayerful solidarity with the Native people who had called us there. This is the place that just on Sunday, water cannons were fired at water protectors in 23-degree weather. It started sometime in the evening and went until I think 3 in the morning or 6 in the morning. It lasted for hours and hours and hours. Elders, young people, protectors, there were I think 300 that were at the site at the time. When I was there and continuing all the time, there are helicopters and single engine aircraft that fly over the camp all the time. I'm a private pilot. I know something about airspace rules, and these aircraft are flying without navigation lights on. They are in stealth mode. Their tactics are fear and intimidation. And just that never-ending sound of engines just wears the spirit down. I only had it for 3 days. There are reports that unknown substances have been dropped from the airplanes, that crop dusters have flown overhead. The drones that you saw the image of earlier, that the water protectors used to be able to capture refuting evidence to what is shared by the Morton County Sheriff, are shot down by snipers that are continually in the hills. There are literally snipers standing and sitting and crouching in the hills that overlook the camp 24 hours a day. We've been asked to return for an interfaith day of prayer this coming Sunday. This was asked to us by Chief Arvo Looking Horse. He's the 19th generation keeper of the White Buffalo Calf Pipe Bundle. He says in his call, "The hearts of all people's faiths must now unite in believing we can change the path we are now on. We, from heart of Turtle Island, have a great message for the world to unite for our children's future. Already we have witnessed many nations of life are now dying because of contamination. Those that swim, those that crawl, those that fly, the planet nation, the four-legged and now the two-legged. We are asking the religious people to come and support our youth, to stand side by side with them because they are standing in prayer. If you can find it in your heart, pray with them and stand beside them. The police department and the National Guard would listen to each and every one of you. This is a very serious time we are in. I know in my heart there are millions of people that feel this is long overdue. It is time that all of us become leaders to help protect the sacred upon Mother Earth. She is the source of life and not a resource. In a sacred hoop of life where there is no ending and no beginning." If you can come next weekend, if you can join me next weekend, I would love to have you there in prayer and in solidarity. And I also recognize that that may be an impossible ask for many people. But you can still be in solidarity with the water protectors through your own prayerful actions, from the time that you spent on that day joining us wherever you are in prayer, of learning about what's going on, of searching your conscience, of deciding for yourself what fits Unitarian Universalist values and where your heart and your faith call you to be. There are resources available that I am happy to provide to you, and I'm happy to talk with any of you after the service if you would like to learn more. But please, it takes so little to join in the spirit of prayer. And however you define prayer, let us not get hung up on the semantics of our own personal theologies. In whatever way you bring your heart forward, I hope you will join us. Thank you.